cutting through an overload of information to get to the heart of the story. This is The Point.
Welcome to The Point, an opinion show coming to you from Beijing. I'm Li Xin. Paying like a local? Not quite yet. It's a top priority for Chinese authorities as they ramp up efforts to attract more international visitors after the numbers nosedived during the COVID time. However, a big hurdle has been the country's advanced electronic payment system. As the Chinese society turns rapidly cashless, newcomers have found it hard to enjoy their stay to the full had they not prepared to adapt to a new scenario. To solve the problem, China has taken a series of measures, including boosting the acceptance of overseas bank cards in venues where foreign visitors may frequent. On March the 14th, the People's Bank of China, which is the central bank, published a bilingual step-by-step guide to payment services in China. How effective have these measures been in enhancing the payment experience for inbound travelers? What further improvements could be made? I'm pleased to be joined here in the studio by Sean Calebs, a seasoned CGTN colleague from Washington, D.C., my colleague, and he has just been visiting Beijing after a hiatus of 5 years.
Five long years.
Well, welcome to the studio here in Beijing, Sean. Good to have you back again. So last time you were here was 2019?
Yes.
And before the pandemic and before everything turned cashless. So now here you have been covering the two sessions. So I want to tell you, first of all, help our audience understand exactly how cashless is the Chinese society for you?
Well, first, I guess I got to kind of back up and explain what WeChat is. To an international audience, it may just sound like some weird name, but here in China, it is everything. It is
an application.
An application that you can download, and it is the world. People communicate, they can send pictures back and forth, but it's really an effective way to do business and also work. If instead of emails, it's much quicker sometimes, much more efficient. You can get instant reply back and forth. But one thing I saw in 2019 with a certain degree of envy, my colleagues here in China were able to embrace a cashless society. So I had to look at it from the outside first. And back then, the bikes were just becoming popular.
The shared bikes.
The shared bikes that you see all across the street. And so many other nations now have those as well.
Yeah.
And so my producer one day took us out and did, and I was like, what did you just do there? Because it was just showing the scanning mechanism within WeChat, and that's how she paid to rent the bikes for us. And then she explained, we're moving toward a cashless society. There's some restaurants that no longer take cash. Some don't even take credit cards. Everybody is moving toward this, but you can't do it. And I was like, wow, why can't I do it? And there were certain restrictions. You had to have a Chinese bank account, I think was the big one that kept me. Once I heard that, I just, you know, that was a deal breaker. So I just stopped at that point.
Yeah.
But things have changed.
Yeah. So that was 2019. And now, you know, because of the COVID, because of the quarantine measures, so we meanwhile advanced very much among ourselves how to get it easier to pay. Mm. We don't take cash. I mean, I haven't touched cash for a long time. So now you're visiting again. How cashless has the Chinese society become?
Almost completely. I mean, almost completely. The only time I saw cash, there was a guy in a store and a guy asked him to break 100 yuan. And he opened up the drawer, and rather than have them all stacked in there neatly like the 100, they were just thrown in the door. Mm. And so he took them out and broke the bill for the individual. But when I came, you know, there were promises. Oh, once you get here, we will be able to help you and connect you and make it so you can have this wonderful new thing. And I thought, It's not going to work. Mm-hmm. You know, there's going to be some hiccup somewhere along the way. And it was incredibly easy. And when you ask to what degree is there a cashless society, I haven't touched cash. I haven't gone to an ATM, nothing.
So what did you have to do? Because you already have the WeChat application installed. You signed up, you registered years ago. So that's out of the way. But with the WeChat in place, how easy or how complicated was it to associate an international credit card or debit card to your WeChat account so that you can start going around?
It's very intuitive. Now, the way I did it may not be the way everyone does it because I had a colleague with me and it came up in Mandarin. Okay. And he kind of said, you know, this is this. But you just go to WeChat, you can click, you know, do you want to hook your credit card up here? Yes. And I mean, 20 seconds, it was done. I mean, it was that easy.
Were you asked to do facial recognition or put in your passport?
I had the choice, and I chose to do facial recognition. You know, the passport is a good question, and I was so excited to do it. I don't remember the specifics because it was so quick. I really should know that. Mm. And then, you know, I guess there are going to be some people who are worried about putting their personal credit card on any kind of app.
Yeah.
And there's going to be some who say, I'm not going to put it on a Chinese app under any circumstances.
Yeah.
And I've had no trouble, especially with the facial recognition, because it's actually two-step. One, I have to enter a code that, you know, and it's a six-digit code, so it's going to be hard to break. And that's been easy enough. And then the facial recognition. And to me, that allows this measure of, okay, I'm going to be all right. But I've been using it every day for 2 weeks and no hiccups. I've checked with my bank several times to make sure everything's gone fine. Mm. But I've had no pushback from the U.S., and it's been seamless here. And I've had a few occasions I was telling you I'll go to buy something, and they'll say, Alipay, whatever. And I was like, no, I have WeChat. And they say, WeChat? Like, they're kind of surprised
that
I have it. Because one thing I have heard is the foreigners, you know, are only now starting to come back. And I think this is one mechanism that is going to make it easier, because clearly there's this push to have more visitors, have more people get an education here, and more people travel. And it's certainly the welcoming mat.
Mm, to make life easier, to make it more foreigner friendly. You talked about Alipay as well. So what is Alipay? It's another paying platform, mm-hmm. same as WeChat, but it's more a payment thing.
Right, it's a full-on payment thing. Apple Pay, Google Pay, anything like that. And what's funny is there's a pharmacy across the street from where we work in Washington, and you can go and you can get a snack there as well. And on their device where you check out, put your credit card. No, you know, you still have to use the credit card, no app or anything like that. Alipay comes up. And I asked the person, I said, do you know what Alipay is? Mm. And they looked at me and said, I heard it's something Chinese. Like, they have no idea what it is. So it cracks me up that it's there. And you could use it, but people aren't.
So imagine you wouldn't have the possibility to hook up your international credit card to the Chinese applications. Imagine you only had an international credit card and cash, mm-hmm. either dollars or renminbi after you changed the money wherever you could. How difficult would it have been?
It's going to be more difficult. And as I mentioned, there's some restaurants that absolutely don't want cash. And they don't want or do not accept credit cards. So you're going to run up against that. It's not going to be a deal breaker, because I think you would be able to go through, but it's going to be awkward, it's going to be confusing, it's going to hold things up. And you have so many in the service industry who are young, they're kids, and this is all they have ever used. You put your WeChat on here, and I can go up, and it says you can either scan or have the money depending on which way you pay, and it's just so simple. You know, to me, it makes 100% sense to move in this direction. And I don't know to what degree they're doing it in the U.S. or in Europe, mm-hmm. but, you know, it's working here, and it's working well. And what I really like is they are embracing foreigners, and they want to make it easier for people to come here, and that's what's important.
Yeah, so definitely that's the direction to go. There have been a lot of discussions about how to make it easier. They're talking about, you know, setting up counters at the airport or making people accept more credit POS machines, because for a very short period of time, I remember maybe 20 years ago or something, Chinese people started to use credit cards, but that never became a popular way of consumption. I mean, you probably know, we just never got used to using credit card. We kind of bypassed the stage of credit card and went straight to this cashless thing. So how difficult do you foresee the measure to ask people to reuse POS machines, you know? So is it going to be effective? Because foreign visitors will carry their credit cards.
Absolutely, and you're going to get pushback from some foreigners who simply don't want to do this for one reason or another. And the only way I think you can combat that is, you know, it sounds simple, but by like what you're doing. You explain to people, this is what it is. And there are going to be people who raise concerns and have questions and just show how it works, how easy it works. There are fail-safe measures in here. Contact your bank before you come overseas. You know, if you feel that uncomfortable about it. And I pretty sure your bank would say, look, we've had people use it, and it's flawless. And I really think that's the key, because China clearly wants more foreign investment. They want people to come here, and they want people to feel at home. I mean, that's, for lack of a better word, that's what it is. It makes it easier to do everything, from check into a hotel, to get a soft drink, to buy ice cream on the street. This isn't probably something everybody wants a broadcast, but I've been told that the indigent, people who beg, you can give them money on WeChat. I have not seen that at all here, but people have told me that's how common it is here.
Yeah. So basically you're saying for the foreign visitors who are coming here, they would probably need to do homework. They need to adapt to a different mindset. They need to take some measures instead of going to the other places where they can take their credit, or they can use dollars and do it. So it has to be meeting each other in between.
Right. And I think approach this with an open mind. I mean, really, if you're going to come here and you're going to visit, my advice would be to embrace it. And then you're going to be ushered in, for lack of a better term, you're going to get beyond the velvet rope. You know, if you're operating the way everybody else does in this country, there is this level of acceptance that comes much more quickly. You know, when people see that I have this, they're like, oh, good, I'm not worried about having to deal with this guy. Is he going to give me cash? Is he going to give me his credit card?
Do you speak Chinese?
I speak one word.
Okay.
No.
So
I do not
speak. You don't have that advantage.
The
WeChat app is like a door opener. It allows you to enter the Chinese world.
It really does. It really, and this, boy, the translation apps nowadays too, if there's any kind of hiccup, that's incredibly simple too. And you can get, like I have, a phone plan. I pay $10 a day from the United States, and I can use my data. I don't have to worry about any other device to try to get out. And I can call home, I can do FaceTime home with my family.
And to contact your Chinese friend, you just use WeChat data.
Yeah, okay. you can voice call, video call, but more often than not, I just hit them up on one line and they get right back to me. Mm. And to me, it's amazing how advanced WeChat is for China and how widely used it is. I mean, if you haven't used WeChat, you've only heard about it in passing in the United States, when you come here, it's almost a necessity. I mean, it really is.
What about calling a taxi, for instance? It's also on a different system, but
different
on
app.
A different platform, but still very much cashless.
Yeah, let me show you my little Didi app here. So I have the app. So if
you're able to use, once you hook your credit card onto the system, you can use it to call it.
Once you can buy things with this, the world is your oyster. Mm-hmm. You know, once you're here, you can do so many different things.
Yeah.
And that's also a big, for example, I was down at Two Sessions, and for people who don't know, it's, you know, the Tiananmen Square area, and my producer did not get a credential, so I'm by myself, and I don't speak Chinese.
Mm-hmm.
My cameraman doesn't speak Chinese. We had to get home.
Yeah.
And it was very easy. We just walked to the corner, and there our cab was, and we got back home. Mm. I would say 5 years ago, there would have been a certain degree of panic. Like, oh God, how do I get home now? It's a long walk.
Okay, so for the ordinary people who are curious about China, but who are not sure about, you know, how big the hassle would be, they would have to enter the Chinese world via the platforms you talk about, WeChat being probably the most important.
Sure, absolutely. And putting your credit card on there.
Putting your credit card.
And I think the biggest thing is we have to get over this demonizing of the two nations. And when you come here, I mean, I've been embraced by everybody. And that's one thing. Governments may have issues, but I think every person I've met since I've been here has been very open, very warm, wants to find out, where are you from? What are you doing here? Have you been here before? Do you speak Chinese? Yes, 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 no.
And you have been using WeChat for how long? For like,
oh gosh, maybe 2014, 2013, maybe.
Yeah,
I mean, when I first learned of it, I could not scan. I would be calling the camera people up. Let me scan you. Let me be your friend. Yeah, you know, because it was just so cool to be, you know, to hook up.
So the first step is to have your mind open and give it a try. And to register on WeChat, you still need some kind of guidance or some kind of, you know, you need a friend, for instance,
sure,
to recommend you. But once you get over that step, it seems that
I didn't know that, because it's been so long since I signed up.
Yeah,
I forgot about it.
But it's also being facilitated to make it easier. Anyway, that's the direction we're looking at. That's the future we're looking at. Thank you so much, Sean Calabs, for sharing with us your experience.
Absolutely, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Sean Calabs, my colleague from DC. When we come back, Chinese EVs are attracting attention in the Middle East. What are local investors looking for? Stay tuned.
Making room for all opinions and seeing events from more than one side. This is The Point.
Middle Eastern investors are increasingly interested in Chinese-made EVs. Nasser Al-Bahri, director of the Electric Vehicle Innovation Summit, said last year that the EV market will grow at an annual rate of 27% in the UAE alone over the next 5 years. Why are Middle Eastern investors looking east in the EV sector? And what can Chinese EVs offer to the oil-rich region in their green energy transition? I was pleased to be joined from Kuwait by Dr. Faisal Al-Manawa, chairman of KX Power, a UK-based environment-friendly energy supplier, and from Shanghai by Professor Ying-Hai Tao, vice dean of Antai College of Economics and Management of Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Dr. Al-Manawa, let me go to you first. We have been hearing a lot of interest from countries, from especially sovereign funds in the Middle East, embracing projects in green energy transition. Why such interest? Why is it important?
Thank you for having me here. Middle Eastern countries, as you know, are increasingly embracing the energy, green energy to be more specific, transition for several reasons. Among such is diversification in economy, environmental concerns, global trend, and perhaps as well energy security and economic opportunity. To discuss some of them, let's talk about the diversification of economy, which is a little bit more toward my expertise. Well, many Middle Eastern countries have economies heavily reliant on oil and gas exports. That's well known. And diversifying their energy sources, in fact, help reduce dependence on fluctuating oil prices. We have realized that during the last decade, I assume, dramatic fluctuation in oil prices, and also creates new economic opportunities in perhaps renewable energy sectors. In addition of that, to that, the economic perspective is pretty important, but environmental concerns perhaps is more reliant as well. The Middle East is experienced in environmental challenges such as air pollution, water scarcity, and desertification. Transitioning to green energy perhaps helps address these concerns by reducing greenhouse gas emission and maybe also promoting sustainable energy. But maybe the most interesting to me is creating job opportunities, and to be more specific, economic opportunities as the umbrella talking here. The green energy transition presents significant economic opportunities like job creation, technology development, as well as investment attraction. The Middle Eastern countries are keen to capitalize on these opportunities, basically to stimulate economic growth and diversification.
Professor Ian, let me get your perspective here. How important is the Middle East as a market for Chinese-made new energy vehicles? How are they doing now?
As you know, China's electric vehicle market has been developing so rapidly in the last 10 years, especially in the last 3 years, the market exploded. I think any international market is very important to China's automobile maker because our production capacity is so high and actually far exceeded our domestic demand. Not only Middle East market, Southeast Asia, European market, they are all important for China's automobile makers. And from the perspective of Middle East, as our guest said, you know, Middle East country, they also have a desire to electrify their economy, including their transportation system. And China's battery technology, you know, electric car technology has been leading the market. So actually, I think investment in this mature technology battery, achieving a more effective international collaboration is mutually beneficial for both parties.
Dr. Omanawa, why are Middle Eastern funds and investors particularly interested in Chinese EV makers? What specifically are they looking for?
That's an interesting question. Let me answer it from the Middle East in general, and not specifically to the sovereign wealth fund, but in general. This can be attributed to, in fact, several factors, among which is market potential, technology expertise in China, and bilateral relations. Talking about market potential, China is well known now that it is the largest EV market in the world, with a rapidly growing demand to electrical vehicles, driven by government incentives mainly, environmental policies, and consumer preferences. The Middle East invests, or investors even more, recognize opportunities to capitalize on such vast market and perhaps take part in its growth. Additionally, technological expertise is an important factor. China has emerged as a global leader in EV technology, with significant investment in research, development, and manufacturing. The Middle Eastern investors recognize the value of accessing Chinese expertise in EV technology, as well as battery manufacturing and perhaps even more related infrastructure to EV. Perhaps the final point, and I think it is critical, is divergence of investment and also bilateral relationship. So talking about divergent of investment, the Middle Eastern countries are looking to diversify their investment portfolio beyond the traditional sectors like oil and gas, which is well known for. Investing in Chinese EV industry offer diversification, obviously, diversification in opportunities and exposure to high growth sector with potential lucrative return. And the final point is the bilateral relationship. I believe it's important to, in terms of strengthening economic ties and bilateral relationship between the Middle East and China, would motivate investment in various sectors such as EV industry. And collaborative ventures in electrical vehicles can, in fact, enhance trade relations and foster mutual economic benefits as well.
Professor In, what's in for Chinese EV makers to receive investments from the Middle East? What kind of opportunities are they looking for? Are Chinese car makers looking for?
The global warming is a critical issue for our society, for the global society. Firstly, in order to stop global warming, win the war against climate change, firstly, we have to electrify the economy. Secondly, we have to turn our energy need to alternative energy or new energy. So when we think about the opportunities for electrify the transportation system that present a huge economic opportunities. Clearly, China is leading the industry on many, many aspects, including the battery industry, including the intelligentization, etc. So I think China, we try to develop the electric car industry, we try to catch the opportunity that has been provided by our need to deal with global warming. And at the same time, we need investment from the Middle East, from all around the globe, to further develop our technology to create competitive advantage compared to other automobile makers. So I think that's valuable for China's automobile maker.
And very important question, which is the potential for cooperation. Are there any specific examples already, Dr. Omanawa, that you can share with us?
Well, there are several examples of potential cooperation, I believe. Infrastructure development, on this angle, I believe Chinese Belt and Road Initiative presents opportunity for collaboration in infrastructure development projects across, of course, I'm talking the Middle East, including transportation, energy, and maybe as well telecommunications infrastructure are all keen to do that. Chinese companies can contribute expertise, financing, and technology to support infrastructure development in the Middle East region. And talking about energy cooperation, I think that's critical because the Middle Eastern countries possess abundant energy resources, while on the other hand, China is the world's largest energy consumer. So that's a nice marriage here, I believe. Cooperation in the energy sector includes oil and gas exploration, production, transportation, and the investment in renewable energy projects is critical. For instance, Chinese companies have invested in renewable energy projects in countries like United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia. And now with our arguably famous prime minister, we're hoping we're going to follow their steps or perhaps even be a leader back, similar to what we have been 30 years ago, 20 years ago, and many, many other years. Regarding the trade and investment, which perhaps is my favorite part here, bilateral trade and investment between China and Middle Eastern countries continue to grow with cooperation in sectors such as manufacturing, infrastructure, to be more specific, construction, agriculture, technology as well. And Middle Eastern countries offer access to markets, natural resources, obviously, and investment opportunities, while on the other hand, China provides capital, technology, market access to the Middle Eastern product.
Many thanks to Dr. Faisal Al-Monawer, Professor at Kuwait University and Chairman of KX Power, and Professor Ying Haitao, Vice Dean of Antai College of Economics and Management of Shanghai Jiao Tong University. Thank you so much, gentlemen.
Thank you for having
me.
And with that, we come to the end of this edition of The Point with me, Liu Xin. As always, you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter using the handle Liu Xin in Beijing. You've got The Point.